There we go. Y'all are awake now, if you weren't already. Hey, if I don't know you, again, to remind you, my name is Will. I have slowly gotten to know some of you over the past month, almost 2 months, of being here in Dallas. I moved here 2 months ago, like I told you last time, and I have a wife and a daughter who's a little over a year old. She's out there running around the hallway. A lot of fun. I'm blessed to have the girls in my life that I do. And I look at them every day and I'm like, how did I end up with such two beautiful women in my life? It's amazing, God's grace in that, and I'm so thankful. It is also, might I add, been a joy to represent the fellas every Sunday in Gender Wars. Fellas, you guys showed up last week. Way to go. Way to go. Give yourselves a round of applause. You really did, and it's been really fun to wave that flag around and yell at the top of my lungs. This morning, I want everyone right now to sit back and think of a time when you were intimidated. Like this guy. Let's pull up that picture. Look at that guy. How funny is that picture? I was just Googling images of intimidated people, and this guy just caught my attention like that. I mean, his eyes, just his mouth, it's almost like trembling. His lips are trembling. His eyes are just wide as could be, and he's in a suit, a really nice suit. So you kind of wonder, makes you wonder what's going on there. That guy looked intimidated to me. Think of a time when you sincerely felt intimidated. Intimidated to the point where you're trembling. Intimidated to the point where you're just fearful. You're feeling inadequate, not good enough. You're faced with someone or a situation or a circumstance where you just feel intimidated. This morning, I want to share a story with you. I want to take you all the way back to my high school days. Okay, believe it or not, I was in high school at one point. And I, believe it or not, I also played sports. It may not look like it now, but I played sports back in the day. I got a little picture to prove that. Oh, there I am. Okay, so I played high school football. That was my senior year. All right, I want to share a story with you about when I felt intimidated. All right, it's the second week of my senior football season. First week we had lost. Going into the second week, I went to a small private Christian school, similar to TCA and schools like that, Canyon Creek and Covenant and all that. I went to a small private Christian school and played football there. The second week of the season, our coach matches us, has this huge idea, okay, to match us up against the number one 5A team in the state. Now, keep in mind, okay, for those of you who kind of know what I'm talking about when I say use those terms, all right, so in Tennessee, the divisions went 1A all the way to 5A. Is that the same in Texas, right? Yeah, okay, good. Awesome. So you can relate with that. So 1A to 5A, all right, we're a 1A school, small private Christian school, all right, with not a very big team, maybe like 50 guys on our team. Going up against the number one team in the state, let alone the number one team in 5A. This has never been done historically in the state of Tennessee in high school football, all right? And our coach has this brilliant idea, right, to put us up against these guys. I mean, we're like David and Goliath style, okay? Like, we definitely felt like small, okay, compared to these guys. So anyways, fast forwarding a little bit. So Friday night of that game gets here, and we're matched up against these guys. And I have to add this, okay? There's a lot of high schools that nowadays are modeling traditions, right? After Division I universities and colleges, you know, mascots and team colors and logos and fight songs and whatnot. Well, Riverdale High School, the team that we were playing, they were one of those schools. And the school they modeled everything after was Florida State University, the Seminoles. All right, the same colors, maroon, gold, white. They had an arrowhead logo. They played the Seminole War Chant fight song. Their marching band, all right, they played that song at their games. So the game is at our place, and we're matched up against the number one 5A team in the state. It's at our place. Biggest game in school history for us. I mean, thousands, I know, I recognize, okay, that Texas football, high school football, has a lot of people show up to their games. I realize that. But that's not the case in Tennessee, all right? But at this game specifically, my senior year, we had thousands of people coming to this game because this kind of matchup had never been done in school history. So here we are. I believe it was Thursday. I said Friday. I believe it was a Thursday night. Here we are. We're about to go up against these guys. So we're all huddled up. Okay, we're on the sideline. We're getting excited. I played receiver. And so our first offense is huddled up on the sideline getting ready to go. Our coaches are getting revved up. The fans are going nuts. And the next thing I remember when we started head on the field was this. Okay, so don't clap, they stink. Okay, so y'all, when I first looked that song up on YouTube and found the track, I'm not a Florida State fan by any means. I graduated from the University of Tennessee, please don't hate me. So I'm not a Florida State fan, all right? But I'm sitting there and literally I start to play it on my computer and I just feel intimidated. They're just like the drum line. I mean, everything, and you get the students in the background just doing the chant, and it's just intimidating. Kind of gets chills up my spine. So we huddled up on the field, and their marching band is playing that as we're running onto the field. And we huddle up, and we all look at each other, and we literally all we can say at this point is we have signed up for this, boys. It's game time. Let's go. And so we went out, and we played Riverdale High School. You know, in the Old Testament, there are a lot of really long, interesting, bizarre stories, right? A lot of people think of the Old Testament, and they kind of get intimidated. They kind of get bored with it. A lot of people would rather read the New Testament, right? Some of us have been there. I've been there before, right? It's just like, oh, man, Old Testament. Habakkuk, what? Numbers, Ezekiel, who are these people? And a lot of people get intimidated by the Old Testament, but I will go ahead and say that there are great stories in the Old Testament that are never told, that are rarely ever told. And I'm here this morning to share one of those stories with you. One story in particular comes from the book of Numbers, chapters 13 and 14. Yes, there is a book called Numbers. Pretty interesting, right? So here's the scene. Let's go to that map on the screen there. There you go. So that map right there, okay? This is a map of what was known as the Promised Land. You heard of the Promised Land? Who's ever heard of the Promised Land in the Old Testament, right? Okay, so good, a lot of people. So the Promised Land, land of Canaan, as it was known, where eventually the Hebrew people, the nation of Israel, spread out and took this land, and all those big names that you see on each colored space, those are the 12 tribes of Israel. And so the whole Old Testament story is about God taking his Hebrew people, the people of Israel, the nation of Israel, and he makes a promise in Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 12, he goes to Abraham and he says, go, leave your country and your people and go to the land that I will show you. Leave everything you know, everything that makes you comfortable and everything you're familiar with, leave it and go to a land that you have not even seen yet. That is flowing with milk and honey, and it's all good, as we say here in modern day terms, okay? This place was the spot to be, this strip of land right here along the Mediterranean Sea. So Abraham goes, and then we have his son Isaac is born, right? And God continues to promise to Isaac the same thing he promised to his father Abraham. And then we have Jacob, right? And then Jacob has 12 sons, which are the 12 sons, 12 nations, 12 tribes, excuse me, of Israel. Then we have Joseph, who was one of Jacob's sons, right? And then we have Moses, Joshua, who leads them into the promised land. So we have a line of men who God makes a promise to them, and he keeps his promises throughout the Old Testament, okay, with bumps along the road here and there, testing of the faith, you know, testing of perseverance and whatnot for the Hebrew people. But they eventually get there. And where we're going to go this morning in Numbers 13 and 14 talks specifically about two men. Okay, the title of this talk is 2 versus 10, right? Kind of keeping the football theme going a little bit, sports theme. 2 versus 10. Those two men being Caleb and Joshua, and the other 10 men being from the other tribes of Israel. Names were not necessarily, well, they were mentioned, but I'm not going to go through all those because it's a lot of really long names. So, anyways, from the story, we have 12 men who face an intimidating situation. 12 men. And 10 of these men respond negatively, and 2 of them respond positively. Okay, so let's read it, all right? First couple of verses here. Numbers 13, 1 and 2, and verse 25. I'm going to kind of bounce around. I'm just going to sum up what's going on in these two chapters, all right? So read along with me. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the people of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, every one a chief among them. At the end of the 40, so they did this for 40 days. So skipping to verse 25. At the end of 40 days, they returned from spying out the land. So here's the scene, right? Joshua, okay? Moses, Joshua, they're here. They're with the people, and God's about to lead them into the promised land. But God says, first, he spoke to Moses, and he said, send men to spy out the land. Send 12 of them, one from each tribe. All right? So we have Caleb and Joshua, and then we have the other 10. To spy out the land. They did that for 40 days. They're out there spying out the land, seeing what all is there, seeing what all kind of people are there, so on and so forth. Go on to the next slide. And they told him, we came to the land which you sent us. It flows with milk and honey. So they're reporting what they saw after the 40 days. All right, it flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. They brought back some grapes to show them that there's good fruit there and there's food for them to eat. However, okay, this is when the intimidation kicks in. However, the people who dwell in the land, the Canaanites, are strong. And the cities are fortified and very large. And besides, we saw the descendants of Anak there. So, they go in, these 12 spies, they come back after 40 days. They say, hey, Moses, we did this. We did what you commanded us to do. But here's the deal. 10 of them said, however, the people who dwell in the land are strong. And the cities are fortified and very, very large. They were intimidated. They looked out at the land and they saw the negative things. And they became immediately dependent upon themselves and the small amount of power that they had against the amount of power that these people had in their eyes. They said, no, we can't do that. They're too big, they're too strong, they're too fast, they're too swift. We can't take them, Moses. Going on. But Caleb, okay, we're introduced here. But Caleb quieted the people. I just want y'all to sit back and just picture this in your mind, okay? If you have to, as I'm reading, close your eyes. But Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it. See, Caleb saw it too. He saw the strong people. He saw the fortified walls in the city. He saw that they were big and large. And he says, let's go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it. Then the men respond who had gone up with him and said, we are not able to go up against these people, for they are stronger than we are. So you see a trend here, right? Caleb steps in, he tries to convince the people, no, we can do this. God has brought us here. He's promised us we can do this. He's going to fulfill his promise, and he's going to let us take it captive. But yet these people continue to rely on themselves, and they look at themselves, and they look at the people of Canaan, and they say, we aren't strong enough. They doubt. And going on. So they brought to the people of Israel a bad report of the land that they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, its people. And all the people that we saw in it are of great height. And there we saw the Nephilim, and we seemed to ourselves like the grasshoppers, and so we seemed to them as grasshoppers. They say, they're feeling inadequate. They're feeling like I felt when I was standing on the sidelines getting ready to play the number one team in 5A instead of Tennessee. They're feeling inadequate. They're feeling fearful. And they're trembling. You can tell by what they're saying. They said they looked like grasshoppers to these people. Small little bugs going on. And Joshua, I love this. Not only do we have Caleb step in, we've got yet another guy that steps in, one who's faithful. He says, and Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes and said to all the congregation of the people of Israel, the land which we passed through to spy it out is an exceedingly good land. Exceedingly, I love that word. Exceedingly good. Its goodness never fails. Its goodness never stops. If the Lord delights in us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land flowing with milk and honey. 10 negative men, 2 positive men. God's goal, this is what I want y'all to get this morning. God's goal with his people was for them to inherit this land that I showed you a few minutes ago, the promised land. He wanted them to have it. He wanted them to possess it. He promised that he would get them there. It wasn't going to be easy, and you can read through the Old Testament of times when it wasn't easy. But there were two guys in particular that stood up and said, yes, we want that land, and we believe that God will give us that land. All the way from Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, Joshua, here they are. They finally made it to the promised land. It was everything they wanted for life. But the minute that those 10 guys took their eyes off of the promise of God and put it on themselves to rely on themselves, in their eyes, they were like, no, we're done. How can you be done? You've made it this far. You made it. How could you give up now? And Joshua and Caleb step in and say exactly that. They were the only two that spoke in confidence and boldness for God. The land to them was worth it. Do you trust God? God, the creator of the heavens and the earth. Do you trust him? Do you believe in his promises? Do you trust that this event actually happened? That through a series of events, God has finally kept his promise and fulfilled his promise and has led them to the promised land for them to take it and for them to be happy and joyful and have bountiful amounts of food and drink and whatever they needed. Do you trust in that God? Or are you like the 10 spies who, when faced with struggle, when faced with intimidation, when faced with conflict, do you stand there and immediately shine a light on yourself and say, I mean, if I can't do it, then no one can. But it's not about me. It's not about you. It's about God. Because he made you the way he made you. And he's promised to take care of you. If you're a Christian and you're following Jesus in your schools, on your athletic teams, with your friend circles, whatever it may be, what will you do when faced with trials, with a choice to trust God or to not? Because Jesus, in between, made a way so that we can trust, that we can have hope, that we can believe, and we can hold on to that belief. Y'all are faced with situations. I was in junior high, okay? And I was in high school, as you saw. Y'all are faced every day with that decision. every day you're faced with that decision to either trust God in this situation or to not. To do what Joshua and Caleb did, to be the two, or to be the 10, which is considered everyone else, what everyone else is doing. You know, we ended up losing that game, okay, against Riverdale. But here's the deal, y'all. It's just a football game. This story of God leading his people to the promised land and Joshua and Caleb stepping up in the face of adversity and choosing to trust God, that is a big deal. That is a big deal. That story has to do with God's redemptive plan of salvation for his people. He was leading them to life in the promised land. And many years later, God sends his one and only son to die on the cross to give us life. Makes sense, right? That he makes his promises and he keeps his promises throughout all of history. I challenge you guys this week, in the next couple weeks, to go to the Old Testament. Go back to this passage. Read through the Old Testament, even if you don't know what's completely going on. And every time you see God say, I will do this, or I will do that, or I won't do this, or Jesus, even in the New Testament, I will do this. I just want you to mark that, and I just want you to, what's he promising there? Because God's word is full of promises for his people. If you are his child, do you trust that he will provide for you in times of struggle? Because we're not promised perfect life here on this earth, but we are eternally in heaven with him. But for now, we suffer for the sake of Christ. We trust for the sake of Christ. Are you choosing to trust him?